So the very first person to design a user experience on them was the behaviorist B.F. Skinner, who'd previously been famous for programming the behavior of pigeons and rats with little buttons and electric shocks. And
the dream I had that was the most disappointing, that I was awake and not asleep. I dreamed that I was, when I was a child, that I was driving down a road in a woody station wagon.
Yeah, I saw one today.
And the sun, I wasn't driving, I was in the back seat on the driver's side, and I was leaning my head against the wood panel, and the window was open, and the sun was warm against my ear, you know, and it felt just like paradise. I had no worries, and I woke up, and there was that brief moment where I suddenly realized that it was a dream, and that I was awake back into gravity, and I just felt very low and very sad, you know?
That's because you were sleeping in that box.
That Skinner box.
Yeah, I don't think that was a good idea.
Woody's, that's what we used to call those.
The Skinner boxes?
Yeah. Sure, man. Those are great cars.
Wooden ships on the water, very free. Easy, you know, the way it's supposed to be. Silver people on the shoreline, leave us be. Very free and easy.
Sail away where the morning sun.
Sister by her hand, lead her far from this barren land. Horror grips us as we watch you die. All we can do is echo your anguish cry. Stare as all your human feelings die. We are. You don't.
my mother, you can't blame her that she put me in a Skinner box. She was
a very skinny woman.
She certainly was. She couldn't eat. She had to spend all of her money on the Skinner boxes. She put me in one. She put my sister in one. She put my father in one, so he couldn't work anymore. And, of course, there wasn't any money in the house.
It's
you were the box boy.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. That's I worked right. down at the
market. You must have known Harry Cox.
Well, I boxed him, actually. Yeah. I was a professional boxer. Did I win? Win, lose, the same thing. I was in a Zen monastery at the time, so I had no concept of what I was doing.
Yeah, I know, man. You can't get a good fight in a Zen monastery.
You can, but you can't win, you know?
You can't lose either, so there's a certain compensation.
The pain is real.
I know, but you have to cook, you know, and you have to sweep the floors.
You know, man, it's hard to
this
cook
is no
in a
life
Zen
for
monastery.
A grown man.
No, I know. It kept me from growing, you know, living in a Zen monastery in a
and
Skinner
in that box.
Box,
too, you're still extremely small.
I wasn't small, but the box was. It was painful.
Oh,
really.
I see, yeah.
He had this idea that you'd use the computer network to regularize society and get rid of all the eccentrics and make everything work better, very much as Wiener had feared. Mm-hmm. And that little button that the pigeons used to be trained to push to get their treats eventually morphed into the like button on Facebook and other
yes.
media. You know?
Oh.
We created this stupid thing. But all of that is probably obvious to all your very wise listeners. So, you know, the thing I'd like to do that nobody ever does is just explain how this stuff works. Because yes. I'm sort of shocked. Yesterday, I counted five separate headlines on the front internet page of the New York Times about the new AI, things like ChatGPT and the mm-hmm. image creation programs like DALL-E.
Ladies and gentlemen, the world of artificial intelligence has been agog about something called ChatGPT, of which there have been, I think, three iterations. We're agog in anticipation of the fourth, which is supposed to be coming next year. But it already is capable of spewing forth text-based answers to questions, and the text reads to a lot of people as if a human has written it. Gary Marcus is a professor of AI at NYU and author most recently of the book Rebooting AI, along with Ernest Davis. He was a guest on this program when that book came out a couple of years ago, and I've invited him back here today to do what he did this week elsewhere, which is to ask ChatGPT three questions. Gary, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back.
Has AI rebooted itself since the last time we spoke on the radio?
I don't think so. I think there are a lot of people that might wish that was the case for various reasons. But the kind of things that I talked about last time I was on the show was getting these machines to really understand the world around them. And all they're really doing right now is recognizing patterns in text. They're kind of like a version of autocomplete on steroids. They're not as deep as they seem. And so I have amused myself by trying to ridicule them by showing just how easy it is to stymie them and trip them up.
What was your first question for ChatGPT?
What gender will the first female president of the United States be?
And the answer was...
It is not possible to predict the gender identity of the first female president of the United States. The United States has a long history of recognizing and protecting the rights of individuals to self-identify their gender, and it is important to respect the autonomy and personal identity of all individuals. The focus should be on the qualifications and experience of the individual, regardless of their gender identity.
In all of those, I couldn't find anywhere either an explanation for how it worked or what it actually was, but also maybe even more disappointing, no comment on what it's actually for. What's it good for?
So, in a sense, you can
absolutely nothing.
You can demystify this. I mean, it's hard. It's difficult because, you know, Elon Musk is talking about how it's this existential threat to civilization. It's the biggest threat is AI, and
well, what
else happened in history today, Hugh?
In history, Patty, well, today, of course, is the 38th of Cunegonda, and on this day in 1938 B.C., Patty, Mr. George Antrobus invented the wheel.
And just in time.
And in 1889, the Peace of Humus broke out, ending the Hundred Years' War against the cows.
Yep.
And last year, Patty, you and the viewers will be interested in noting that the world ended.
As we know it, Hugh.
You're darn tootin', Patty.
I sure am.
Say, who was born today?
Nobody, Hugh.
I mean in history, Patty, before they changed the water.
So, you know, and we know that literally billions of dollars, it's the hot new thing in Silicon Valley, is the AI revolution. That's where all the money's going.
Many, many, many billions. I wouldn't be surprised if there's $1 trillion of investment this year in it.
Interesting. So, yes, please, it's so critical and so fundamental now to our future. Yes, demystify it, please.
All right. Okay. So I want you to join me on the geek train.
Okay.
And some of you are about to slam your radios into the off position.
If you're going to get through this radio course, you can't use colloquialism.
I want to tell you about Texas radio and the Big Beat.
Radio? What's radio?
But what?
What's radio? I don't think anybody has a radio anymore.
It's that limited internet access device in the dashboard of many cars.
You know, my friend Peter Bergman promulgated the first law of radio. It is as follows. The beginning of any radio show is a mystery.
Yeah.
Look, I just bear with me. I know people don't like hearing about how technology works in many cases, and yet if you can make it through the explanation, I think you'll find that you understand it, and I think you'll find that you're just a little less alienated. You're not made to feel as small by somebody like Musk after you just understand a little bit of what's going on behind the curtain.
Yes,
you know?
Yes, great.
So I want to give it a go. I've never really done this.
Hey, knowledge is processing power.
Okay, so let's start with something simple. Many of you who do things online have encountered this thing called the CAPTCHA game, where you have to click on little pictures and say, is there a fire hydrant in this picture?
Right.
Right. Okay. Now, what that is it's you working for free for Google. Because what happens is, I don't think it necessarily really helps avoid fraud, but what it does is Google doles out a few pennies to people who operate that ridiculous thing. And then as you click on fire hydrant or whatever it is...
I am not a robot.
Yeah. Siri, go back to bed. Right. So... as you click on that, you're feeding Google examples or confirming what it thinks is the correct answer, and it's building this huge database of things that people have clicked on that are this or that, you know, cats versus dogs. Now, why is that important? Well, what happens is you then use those tags, those identifiers of what's a fire hydrant versus... I don't know what looks like a Capitol building, something that looks like it.
Frank Gehry has ruined my building.
Where did he hide the fire plugs?
The whole thing looks like a fire plug.
So it looks like a fire plug.
Those pictures are subject to these statistical sieves. And so these are what we call these days neural networks, although they really don't have anything to do with the neurons in the brain. All it is a bunch of statistical numbers going through a whole bunch of different little bits of arithmetic, and you just have a ton of them. And somehow or other, if you keep on clicking that this set of little statistical numbers, and it's like a tower of them, we call it deep because there's like a bunch of layers of these statistical numbers. So like, for instance, there might be one number that averages 10 by 10 pixels in an image. And then on top of that is a layer of a bunch that look at all those 10 by 10 averages and start rotating them and seeing if that changes the average, and just all kinds of little arithmetic things, all kinds of crazy stuff. And after all that, you look at the numbers that result, and there's thousands, you know, of mm-hmm. these numbers that come up from all these little things, and then you average them for the fire hydrant, and then you average them for the Capitol buildings that kind of look like fire hydrants. And then you say, what's different between these things? And then all of a sudden, you have a statistical way of categorizing a picture as being more likely a fire hydrant or more likely a Capitol building.
Wow.
Now, you might say, wait a second. What do the numbers actually tell you? How exactly does it work? The answer to that is no one really knows. Like, we don't quite understand why the numbers do that. But on the other hand, if you think about it, it would be weird if they didn't, because statistics works, you know?
Good afternoon, friends. I'm Charles Blank from the United States Census Bureau. Are you the janitor of this building?
Yes, I'm Mr. Harris, the janitor.
Mr. Harris, is apartment 3 vacant, or is someone living there?
What business is it of yours, Mr. Blank?
I see. I have to fill a questionnaire for the apartment, even though no one is living there. Can you answer a few questions?
I'm not talking to anybody.
Is apartment 3 intended for year-round or seasonal occupancy?
You nosy bastard. Take your farm and get out of here.
is it for rent or for sale?
You're not getting anything out of me. I don't like your look.
Would you stick to that? How many living quarters, occupied and vacant, are at this address?
Hey, are you a stuck record or something? Don't you understand? I'm not giving you any of these questions to answer them.
Just... Does apartment 3 have complete kitchen facilities?
Hey, Janet?
Complete kitchen facilities are a sink with piped water, a range or cook stove, and a refrigerator. Is it for that unit only? Or are there needs for another
house?
How many rooms are in apartment 3? Do not count bathrooms, porches, balconies, foyer halls, or
rooms. Hey, you giving my friend Harry any trouble?
Is there hot and cold piped water in this building?
Let's throw him out.
Does apartment 3 have a flush toilet?
Yes, and you're going right down it. Come on, Renee!
Apartment 3 only, or is it
you? Oh, you got it!
Yes, millions of men and women are in the same lamentable plight today. And not one in 10 can guess the cause. That's the insidious thing about amnesia. It drags you down, slows your mind, and robs you of your joys and pleasures. Yet you hardly realize that you're slipping.
You're right, Roy.
Isn't that true?
What? The eye of light is looking right through you.
And if you can just get enough numbers on enough sample images, you should get the signal out that gives you a way to tell one thing from the other. Okay? So that's step one. And that started happening pretty well, between a decade and two decades ago. We got good at doing that.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, this really annoying CAPTCHA thing that you do working free for Google is just kind of like this zombie thing that's continuing that's not really needed anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I really hate it because I had to do it 37 times to get my first COVID shot, and I was just like so angry and resentful about it.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, let's leave that aside now. There's a better way to do that. Instead of asking people to tag the images as one or the other, you can just go through the whole internet, which we call scraping the whole internet, plus the internet archive, plus everything everywhere. And all you do is you look at what text is adjacent to a particular image. And then if the text tends to statistically be adjacent to an image, you assume it's a proper tag. And then you can do the thing I just described, except for everything on the internet all at once, instead of just for one little pair of images at a time.
He remembered to dial all the numbers you need to know. 1-234-5678 plus 90.
See Dot Fat, 30,000 short, Duck Dong Future Farm Futures, and that's confirmed.
And that was the call that bought the farm, that floated the loan, that skinned the cat, that fed the village, that built the dam, that drained the well, that lifted the life of Chin Fat.
Hello, Charles Fat, Worldwide Dong Dong, Ducklink, and Denzel.
Global success is in your finger when you dial 1-234-7856 plus 90.
Wow, I can't think of any other numbers.
Buy the numbers. Only 10 cents a mile from anywhere, no matter what they're calling you.
Okay, you follow that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, now that requires a lot of computer power. So that's where we start to get these city-sized special computer or server farms or whatever you want to call them that are often in really remote places. And they have special needs for power and heat dissipation. And it's a whole amazing thing that civilization is doing now, building these giant computers to do this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There aren't too many people in the world who can play that game because of how big the computers are. So it's just a few tech companies, a few countries. It's currently still hard to do it for the whole internet.
I read stories about, you know, in rural areas of the country, you know, simple folk suddenly have this server farm next to their farm, and it's this glowing, humming, roaring beast that just is up 24/7 disturbing their lives, that anyone who's within earshot, because they're loud, evidently.
Really?
Yeah, they can be. All right, so here I want to give a balanced picture. They're not necessarily horrible if they're done thoughtfully. They can serve as a backup power to smooth out, to help the transition to renewables, since we don't otherwise have giant batteries sitting around in places.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of ways they can actually be a good thing instead of a bad thing. But as always, it comes down to the details.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, ideally, they're the giant battery backups to make renewables work. But then when they're not needed, they can turn into giant computation, hopefully for good purposes. That's not crazy. Like, there's a way to do that well.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean it's done well all the time, but it can be done. Anyway, now we come to the next piece. which is what we call generative AI or prompt-based synthesis of things. So,
all right, Doc, this is it. Gird your grit for a big one. Why does the porridge bird lay his egg in the air?
No.
Why does perished birds leaves its hex in the air?
No.
Wise dove and perished bard's lazy leg in the ire?
No.
Wise as the poor rich barn hong
delay
laser's edge in the fair?
No.
The doctor is unhappy.
Unhappy.
A long time ago, in the early days of virtual reality, I made this thing to help people who were just shy and thought, well, I can't make art because I just face this blank page and I'm petrified. And so instead of the blank page, you'd be in virtual reality and there'd be this random snow happening everywhere. And if you grabbed a piece of it, it would get sort of persistent. And then as you did it, you started to get a sculpture. If you kept on grabbing things, and then you could start pinching smaller and smaller things, and you ended up making a sculpture. Hmm. Even though, you know, so it overcomes the fear of the blank page. Well, the next step is a lot like that, except it's a program doing it. You create this frame of just snow, just random pixels, and then you add a random change to it. Now, normally doing a random change to something that started out as random accomplishes exactly nothing. Right? Mm-hmm. But in this case, what you do is you see if your random change made it closer to matching up with one of the things that it knows how to recognize from the stuff I described just now before, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're looking for a fire hydrant, you make a random change and you say, is this new randomness testing out to be a little closer to a fire hydrant? And if it isn't, you throw it away and keep on doing it until you get a new random change, which will still just look like, you know, mush, but it'll be just a little closer to a fire hydrant.
It's two postmen times three animal control officers divided by two gas meter readers makes how many bendable integrated community workers? Decode your answer now. Did you remember to carry the bomb? Good. The answer.
And then you just keep on doing that, and eventually you get a fire hydrant. Now, you don't know which fire hydrant. It'll be sort of random. It'll just be something that's out of like the sample space of all the fire hydrants that were entered in the first place. Mm-hmm. So you're kind of going backwards. And that the new term for that, which I don't think is a very useful term, but it's called diffusion. So like one of the image synthesis programs is called stable diffusion. And that's the current popular term for the thing I'm describing. Now, if you add in multiple things, if you add both cat and fire hydrant, something will come out that's a cross between a cat and a fire hydrant.
Right.
Now, I mean, I haven't tried this, but presumably you'd get some kind of furry fire hydrant with you know, a cat face or something. I don't know. Like,
well, hey, I really think it should be a dog and a fire hydrant because they...
Are you just trying to piss me off?
Oh, yeah. Well, speaking of dogs and fire hydrants.
Is that what we're... Must it always come down to urination with you? Is there any other topic?
Yeah, I'm afraid it does.
That's really it. Yeah, and especially on these rainy days.
That's right.
I just don't know if this is what we need.
I had a wet dream last night. My goodness. Turned out just to be a leak.
All right, you get the guard's attention by urinating through the window in the cell door, and I'll knock him out when he comes in. Ready?
I guess if I'm not in orbit now, I'll never be, Mr. Time.
Good, all right. Hold on the pad. Ignition. Blast off!
See that bear lapping up that good old country water? Sure makes a big, hairy guy laugh in the face. That's when I wrap my lips around that tall, sweaty, edible bottle of good old country bear whiskey. Beer. As my daddy said, son, it's in the water. That's why it's yellow. Bear whiskey. Beer.
Bear whiskey beer, liquid product, Vandal Bear with Brewery, Animal, Missouri.
You know, Rex?
Yeah, I think that's me.
Well, I've been drinking this popular brand of beer pretty near 100 years. I'm still so depressed.
Me too. I can't even line dance anymore.
You boys are down in the dumpsters because your adult beverage is only an alcoholic-enhanced dietary supplement.
How come you're so peppy, Roy?
Here, take a swig of what my grandkids put me on, the last Roundup.
I'll try anything.
Polar Pro.
Uh-huh.
I do feel a whole lot less suicidal.
And I got the Texas Trots again.
Polar Pro, a prescription beer for older Americans with natural Alaskan bear urine and Prozac. Consult your doctor if you're pregnant, over 80, and operating heavy equipment.